auspicious skies for amber waves of grain. For purple mountain majesty above the
well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us this hour Barry Shamish, and Barry comes from Israel. He's written a number of very important books. One of them, of course, went into the strange death of Rabin. And, of course, the fact that he was really assassinated, not by simply disaffected right-winger, but, of course, it was an intelligence operation. He has very, very convincing videos. And if you've never seen the video or DVD, you'll want to see it. And you'll be as convinced as I am that everything the American people and the Israeli people, of course, believed about the assassination of Rabin just was not true. And then, of course, more recently, he's been talking about the murder of Ariel Sharon. And, of course, that really got him into trouble over in Israel. And he believes that there are very evil forces working in Israel that are independent of the government, that control the government, that have a different agenda, and certainly are not looking for the type of Israel that the average Israeli citizen really wants, but are dedicated to this internationalist dream. So with that as a background, Barry, you pick up the story.
Yeah, well, I am actually preparing a speech on this show, if you can stand being used. I'm going to be in Salt Lake City with Ken Bowers on July 15th, I'm going to be, I believe it's the Rice... believe me, I've never heard of these any more than you have, but I'm going to read it. I'm going to be in the house. Oh, I don't know. I'm going to be somewhere in Salt Lake City. I guess you phone Ken Bowers and find out. Rice Campus, wherever that is me, and I'm room 101. I'm doing a speech on the murder of Utah Congressman Wayne Owens. And that is, I have a new book out. It's been out a year and a half. It's called Sheptaitzvi, Labor, Zionism, and the Holocaust. I have one full chapter on the murder of Wayne Owens.
Now, most of our listeners don't even know who Congressman Wayne Owens was. So who was he, and why was he murdered?
Well, the first thing is, any U.S. congressman who's found dead on the beach opposite the Tel Aviv Hilton should be a subject of pretty serious discussion. People don't die of heart attacks on the beach, and let alone him. That's number one. He was found in the year 02, dead on the Tel Aviv Hilton beach at 9 o'clock in the evening. Okay, that's the general who he is. The point of the matter is he was very involved in the Middle East. He had his own think tank in Washington called the Middle East. You know what? I'm switching phones. I hope you don't mind. This is awful, but I can barely hear you on this phone. Hold on one sec. Can you hear better? Yes, I can. Hello?
Yes, hello? We're right here. Go ahead.
Oh, very poor line. He had his own think tank in Washington, the Middle East Special Projects think tank. It was founded in 1989. It was dedicated to who knows what in the Middle East, but...
Hold that thought here in just a moment.
Okay. I can't hear a thing. This is good.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Our guest this afternoon is Barry Shamish, who has written extensively about what's going on in Israel. He is an Israeli citizen. He certainly is very, very concerned about what he feels is the betrayal of his country by powerful forces working within Israel, whose dedication is not to the preservation of Israel, but to an internationalist dream. And he believes, of course, this ties into a secret group is known as the Sabbateans, and perhaps he can even touch on that later in the program. When I first heard this story, I never heard of the Sabbateans, and so I went to the Encyclopedia Britannica, and sure enough, there really was this ancient sect of Israelis, they were followers of a man named Sabbati. Be that as it may, certainly Barry has gone extensively into the background of the murder of Rabin. He's written more recently about the murder of Ariel Sharon, and he has written a book where he goes into the murder of an American congressman a couple of years ago. So I'm going to let him go ahead and tell the story, Barry. So you can go ahead and repeat a little of the introduction. Who was this congressman? Why was he murdered? And why is that important today?
By the way, okay, I'm back. I had a very bad phone before, and I could barely hear you. And I got to say that your communications in this country are absolutely primitive. But let's go. Wayne Owens had in Washington Center for Middle East Peace and Economic Cooperation. He founded that in 1989 with two bad people, Daniel Abraham and Stephen Cohen. Now keep that in mind, because Daniel Abraham put Ehud Olmert in power. Without Daniel Abraham supplying the bucks, Olmert would not be in power today.
All right, and for our listeners, Olmert is the current Prime Minister of Israel. Is that right? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, during the campaign, there was actually a scandal, because it was discovered that Olmert, that Abraham paid three times more for Olmert's house than was worth, and that was used for campaign contributions, all kinds of dirty illegal campaign contributions by this very, very filthy man named Daniel Abraham, who is also, by the way, supplying Yeshiva University with its Foreign Affairs Department. He is actually training tomorrow's rabbis to obey the Council on Foreign Relations.
All right.
He,
so,
of course, is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. That goes without saying.
All right, hold that thought for just a minute. We'll be back as we bring our other stations on board. But the Council on Foreign Relations has powerful influence in Israel today. All right, Barry, and so Barry is basically talking about the fact that the congressman had established an organization over there, along with a couple of rather disreputable Israelis. One of them was a man named Abraham, who actually was very much involved with the current prime minister, Mr. Olmert, and Mr. Olmert would not be in power, according to Barry, had it not been for some rather questionable campaign contributions from Mr. Abraham. But Mr. Abraham also worked with this American congressman who died rather mysteriously in Israel a couple of years ago. So pick up the story, Barry.
Okay. Now, the second person involved, I'm going to give a little background why Owens, in fact, was killed in the first place. Now, I got to tell you something. I'm giving a speech in Salt Lake City, and I don't know where to begin this, but here is the beginning. In December of 2002, Mariv, the Israeli newspaper, did an amazingly huge and important story on one Ozrat Lev. Ozrat Lev was the aide for Yossi Ginesar. Now, I know these names might sound weird to you, but I will try and sort them out. Yossi Ginesar was the deputy head of the Shabak until 1986, when he was forced to resign over two major perjury scandals.
Okay, and this is part of Israeli intelligence. Would that be comparable to the, not quite the CIA, what would it be comparable to?
It would be very comparable to the CIA.
Would it be? All right, fine. Well, then what's the Mossad?
No, it's not the Mossad,
no.
It's internal.
All right.
Next, Ozrat Lev, that confuses me. Ginesar. Next, Ginesar is forgiven by the president of Israel for his crimes. His name is Chaim Herzog, very, very dirty man. He's got a very, very dirty son sitting in the Knesset today. And he is forgiven completely. And this, by the way, to this very day, Chaim Herzog is remembered for forgiving genocide, these crimes.
Now, this would be called a pardon here in the United States.
Yes, it is a pardon. And he was never forgiven for that, never. But neither here nor there, genocide is now free, and all of a sudden, he gets a job. He's free, and the first person to hire him is Ariel Sharon, who is then, I believe, trade minister. He makes him head of the Import Export Institute. He's on his way now. Next, Eliezer Ben Eliyahu, Benjamin Ben Eliyahu, hires him again for a major job. And I'm getting so confused with the jobs he gets. But the big, big job. Yitzhak Rabin becomes prime minister and appoints him as special advisor to the Palestinians. And that's when the money starts rolling in. Really rolling in. Now, he gets hired by every prime minister afterwards, all the way to Barack.
Now, what is this man's name, Barry? What's this man's name?
Yossi Kinesar?
Okay, Yossi Kinesar. Go ahead.
Right. Now, Barack is gathering his team together for Camp David. And he wants Ginesar on his team. Now, why would he want Ginesar on his team? Okay, it doesn't make sense. But he does. The country's attorney general, his name is Eliakim Rubenstein, says no way. Unless he gives a complete accounting of his business deals with Yasser Arafat, he cannot be on the Israeli team. He refuses to do that. And we will soon find out why he refused to do that. So what does Barack do? He lifts up the phone to William Clinton, President of the United States, and Clinton agrees to invite Yossi Ginesar as part of his team. And that's what happens. Okay? At the Camp David talks, where Barack and Arafat were supposed to make peace, Yossi Ginesar was part of Bill Clinton's peace team. And don't think he's an American. Okay? Now, what does this mean? This means, of course, that Clinton is getting a big chunk of the stolen money. And here's the stolen money now. And here's the big, big Ozrad Lev expose in Mariv in the year 02. Yossi Ginesar offered Arafat a way to get rid of almost $350 million of money stolen from the Palestinian people in secret Swiss bank accounts.
All right, now, of course, the thing is that America is giving a great deal of money to the Palestinians, and Arafat is just siphoning all this money off, not giving it to the people, not using it to build the health, the clinics or the schools or the other things or stimulate the economy. Arafat is collecting a couple of billion dollars of our tax money, but what are you going to do with this? How are you going to hide it so that everybody doesn't know you're stealing it? And so did this gentleman then help Arafat
steal the
money?
He sure did. He opened up a secret Swiss account. Now, to make sure nobody knew it came from Arafat, here's the big one that ties Wayne Owens to this mess. And believe me, it is a complicated mess.
Wayne Owens is the American congressman, right?
The Utah congressman found dead on Tel Aviv Beach year 02. He needed someone to be the funnel for the money. He needed phony straw companies to fill the bank account. Companies that do nothing. They exist only in name. However, who became the general manager of the straw companies? Dr. Stephen Cohen. Now, what is so exciting about this, other than he is on Shimon Peres' own peace center, as is Daniel Abraham, as is Yossi Ginesar, as is everybody in this story? What's very exciting about this is he's Wayne Owens' personal business partner. Now we've got a problem. Wayne Owens has a problem, a real problem. If this thing is investigated, even remotely, the connection between him and Cohen is going to be made automatically.
Now, who is Dr. Stephen Cohen?
You can see him on the American media even. He claims to be a Middle East peace expert.
Is he American or is he Israeli?
American.
He's American. Okay, fine. Go ahead.
American. They're all American.
Okay, fine.
You're right. Okay, now Cohen, once the Gennesser scandal spreads, it's now front page news in Israel. It is the biggest, actually, it's the biggest scandal. I'm trying to think of when there was something, a financial scandal this big ever in Israel's history. I don't believe there ever was.
Now, what year are we talking about?
2002.
Okay, 2002. Go ahead.
Yeah. And once the connection is made between Cohen and Wayne Owens, he is going to be implicated.
All right, fine. Now, and does this involve the money that's coming from the United States to Arafat, that Arafat's trying to get?
Whatever money he gets.
All right, fine. So they're all involved with helping Arafat squirrel away the money?
No, they're all involved in stealing the money.
Okay, fine.
Well, you're joking. They all have a piece of the pie. Don't jump ahead so quick. There is a lot of pie here. Okay? Lots and lots of pie here. I haven't begun to touch. $350 million is nothing compared to the extent of the monies these corporations, Wayne Owens, Peace Center, and Seaman Parrott's money laundering operation called the Peace Center is laundering. Okay, this is just Arafat's money. Okay, now we have to understand these Peace Centers don't exist to bring peace. They exist to lure money into the Middle East to be stolen. The amount of stealing Wayne Owens was involved in was possibly in the billions of dollars. Okay, this I hope you understand. All right, let's make it easy again. I'm going to give you two projects that went through Wayne Owens of Peace Center. One was an economic economic development corporation run by, once again, on the board of Wayne Owens Peace Center and the Shimon Peres Peace Center is someone named Hani Masri, an Arab. $60 million was taken from USAID and opened by the American government and closed by the American government because of fraud within 1 year. For that development center. Then there's the incredible $400 million used to create a desalination plant that was going to serve both Ashkelon and Gaza. That was all Wayne Owens' little operation. I'm going to do something for you. I'm going to read the board of this. By the way, it's never opened. The money was taken. It's never opened. I'm going to read you the board. Get ready. Here is the board of the desalination plant. APEX, Board of Governors. President and co-founder, the Honorable Wayne Owens, Chairman. Chairman and founder, Daniel Abraham. Okay, Senior Advisor, Sarah Ehrman, who is the co-founder of Americans for Peace Now. Okay, Chairman of Astro Investment Company, Sabi Masri, cousin of what's his name, Masri, the one of the, leave it be, it's another Masri. The Honorable Shimon Peres, Chairman, the Peres Center for Peace. John Friedman, who supplied the money for the Rabin murder. French businessman, supplied the money for the rally that killed Yitzhak Rabin. Look at the strategic partners. Yossi Beilin, Economic Cooperation Foundation. Mikhail Gorbachev, no less. In other words, it's all the peace criminals.
All right, no, but you're speaking, they're referring now to Mikhail Gorbachev's wife?
Mikhail is his Gorbachev.
All right, Mrs. Gorbachev, go ahead.
Okay, in other words, it's all, what is that, Razi Gorbachev? She was killed about 10 years ago? Why would I refer to her?
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Barry Shammah.
Mikhail Gorbachev is a partner in this.
Right. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Barry Shammah as he begins getting into the background of the strange death of an American congressman in Israel. Now, most Americans have not heard of this. This is something pretty well shuffled under the rug. They wanted you to believe he died of a heart attack lying on the beach across from the hotel there in Tel Aviv. But well, there are lots of strange things going on, and a lot of this apparently ties back into the very powerful people in the CFR who run America. Barry, you go ahead and pick up the story.
Now the casino. Okay, now that casino that was opened in Jericho by Yossi Ginassar and his partner Muhammad Rashid, who really is Arafat. Now this is some casino. This casino was built supposedly to bring a good economy to Jericho. It was in fact an enormous money laundering machine. The figures I have read accurately, I say accurately, talk about $800 million a month in money laundered through the Jericho Casino. This was founded not by Yasser Arafat. It was taken over by Yasser Arafat. It was founded by Martin Schlaff. Keep that name in mind, by the way, because he may have had plans to do with Sharon's death. Plenty to do with it. You know, I'm trying to keep this easy, and every name I bring up is tied to another crime, and the story will just get lost if I do every lost crime. Martin Schlaff built the casino in Jericho, and he was, now here's a big story. He negotiated the casino with several people, but the most prominent, and the reason why the Likud covered up the Ginassar scandal is the most prominent were Dov Weisglass, Shimon Peres' personal attorney, and his son Omri. They negotiated the casino, and they had a chunk of it. In other words, the same people, Yossi Ginassar and company, which means Mohammed Rashid, Arafat's personal banker, and it means Ozrat Lev, because much of the money came from the casino, much of the money. We're all working with the Prime Minister, his son, and his attorney. And this is not just speculation, it's far from speculation. The whole gang, which is called the Israeli government, are casino, so-called owning, money laundering, bunko artists, and that is what Wayne Owens was supporting. That's what his so-called peace and economic foundation in Washington was actually supporting, if you can believe this. Can you, by the way?
Well, I can believe almost anything. I know there's a lot of corruption, and certainly it would be in every government in the world today.
He wasn't part of a government. He was doing this on his own. Okay, you got to remember, he had a private NGO. Okay, not part of any government, Wayne Owens. Now, we have to ask the main question. Now, I'm giving you just the outline, by the way. I have got so many other details of what he did. Now, Wayne Owens flew to Israel on Daniel Abraham's private jet from Syria. I know what he did the last trip, and I think I may just go into it. But I know who I strongly suspect was the killer of Wayne Owens. Strongly suspect, because Wayne Owens died because he was poisoned and given a heart attack one way or another. One way or another, he was given the heart attack, and he was thrown on the beach opposite the Tel Aviv Hilton. He had no record of heart disease, and by the way, nobody in the history of Tel Aviv's beaches has taken a walk and died of a heart attack.
All right, fine. Hang on. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, I guess it's Barry Shamish, and he's going to the background of the strange death of Congressman Wayne Owen, and of course, who supposedly goes to walk on the beach there just at the hotel in Tel Aviv and has a heart attack and dies. But he's associated with some very powerful and wealthy men, you know, who have literally hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars at their disposal and are working behind the scenes, you know, in Israel and elsewhere, to certainly feather their own nest. And, of course, they're working with Arafat, too. And Arafat, these are supposedly Jewish people. They're working with Arafat, who's leading the Palestinians. So pick up the story.
Okay, I'm going to leave my phone number right now so I can finish the story with dignity. I need speaking dates, and the information I have is like none you've ever heard. My number is 918 982-2333, 918-482-2333. If you want to know how Wayne Owens died, I'm not positive, but I think I know who did it. And the person who did it was Avi Gill. Avi Gill was Shimon Peres's close advisor. He is called an architect of Oslo, even though he had nothing to do whatsoever with Oslo. But nonetheless, he was the last person to have dinner with Wayne Owens, according to all reports, that he had a private dinner representing Shimon Peres, and that, by the way, is how Sharon died, too.
Now, is it possible that didn't our FBI investigate the death of an American congressman?
Shall we say not a prayer? Not a prayer on this earth? They'll get a doctor, say it's a heart attack, and no one's investigating. And by the way, I have lots of stories about his family. His family has been in touch with me for years, saying they've got their suspicions, but the Mormon Church won't touch it. I've got lots of stories about that, about how I'm extremely close with Joel Skousen, a marvelous investigator, but you can just cannot talk Wayne Owens with him. Ever since I brought that up, he has nothing to do with me on almost every level. The Mormon Church is covering it up, I assure you of that.
Why would the Mormon Church cover up
something? Maybe they don't want the world to know the kind of corruption they're involved in. I don't know. Okay, I don't know Utah. I'm going to show up in Utah and give this speech. I'm going to let the audience tell me what's going on. There are a lot of things that I truly don't understand. Number one, if you look at the chairman and the board of Wayne Owens
Peace Center,
Peace and Economic Development Center. Nobody's from Utah. They're all these Shimon Peres gang. They're all Daniel Abraham and Stephen Cohen. They're all from the CFR, by the way. Every last one of them is from the CFR. Stephen Cohen, of course, is CFR as well. Now, Cohen, let's not forget something. He's the business and development partner of Wayne Owens. He is the CEO of all the phony companies of Yasser Arafat. Where does that come into matters? If this thing were properly investigated like it should have been, and it never was, Wayne Owens was guaranteed to be named. Guaranteed. And if it were truly properly investigated like I did, I have a whole chapter in my new book on this. I go through every little angle, and I want to tell you, I'm going to do just one little angle, and that's what Wayne Owens did on his last trip. Okay? Wayne Owens flies into Israel. He had his own agenda that trip. First of all, he must have been hopping mad. The genocide scandal had broken just 2 weeks previously. That's all. So he was on Daniel Abraham's plane, and he must have been furious that he was exposed so badly. Don't forget, he was exposed as a crook. Let's not forget that. He doesn't come out well from the scandal. What does he do? He meets two alternative Palestinians, Sari Nusseibeh and their finance minister, Salam Fayyad. And he has a plan for getting rid of Arafat. He meets them and says, we got to get rid of Arafat. And he says, you will take over, Fayyad will take over, and Nusseibeh will take over. You're going to replace Arafat. 1 minute after he left the meeting with Nusseibeh, Nusseibeh was arrested. In Jerusalem, arrested and thrown to jail. Okay, it was over. And as for Falawa, something fascinating happened. After Owens' body was returned to the United States, the American government decided that Falawa would now be the new prime minister of the Palestinian authorities. They announced that there's going to be a new prime minister replacing Arafat. That lasted about 12 seconds. And nonetheless, whatever he was up to, there was no question that Owens was fighting this scandal. Okay, he did not want to be named in a scandal. That's number one. He would. What were his options? If he's named in a scandal, it's not the $350 million that's missing that would have killed him. It's the desalination plant. It's the development corporation. It's the billions that went through his Peace and Economic Development Corporation, which would have killed him forever.
All right, hold on. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Barry Sammons. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Barry Samuelson. We're talking about the strange death of Congressman Wayne Owens, and of course, this was back in 1992, and he was playing footsies with a number of people who were over there representing, well, they were all members of the Council on Foreign Relations, but somehow they were involved in business deals with Wayne Owens Peace Center. Not only that, they were involved with Arafat, who was supposedly the enemy of the Jews, although most of these people themselves were Jewish. So there are lots of inconsistencies here, aren't there, Barry?
I wouldn't call them Jews. I would call them people who may have had some Jewish blood in them, but they were working against the Jews.
All right, well, I certainly agree with you. Go ahead.
Now, he wasn't the last one killed. There was someone, an honest U.S. aide, auditing the funds of Wayne Owens' de-Stalinization plant. His name was Lawrence Foley. He was the most senior U.S. aide employee based in Amman, Jordan. He was assassinated on October 28, 2002, right after Owens.
Now, when was Owens done in?
I'm having trouble with the phone once again. What was that?
When did Wayne Owens die?
He died, if I'm not mistaken, it was September.
It was September.
A month before Foley was killed.
Okay, fine. So we have the death of Wayne Owens is September the following month. This senior administrative aide in Amman, Jordan, which is very, very close at hand, dies as well. And is he actually auditing the records of this whole situation?
There are enormous records. That's the whole point. When I did this research, I was overwhelmed with all the information. Look, I'm going to try and just put things in perspective.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't know if that can be done. Every single person working... Oh, boy. Okay. I'm going to give you an example of Prime Minister Sharon was forced to give the Palestinians $2 billion. And there was no way to do it because of all the terror. So what did they do? The United States formed an official monitoring facility working through Wayne Owens' site, his NGO. And who was on it? Well, Daniel Kircher, the CFR's American ambassador to Israel, Dov Weisglass, deeply implicated in the Ginnasar scare, and the person I believe killed Wayne Owens, Avi Gill.
Hold that thought, please. All right, well, this is Dr. Stan. Go ahead, Barry. Barry is certainly going to the background of the death of Congressman Wayne Owens. Pick up the story there.
Hello?
Go ahead. Go right ahead.
I hit the phone. I'm going to walk around and see if I can get a little better line. Glenn?
Okay.
Hello?
You're doing fine. You're coming through well
I'm
here.
I'm going to try and open another phone. Let's see how it goes. Can you hear better?
You're doing fine. I can hear you fine.
I got the phone back. I'm telling you guys, you got to do something with your communication.
Okay, fine. Well, let's just go ahead with the story because
right.
We can hear you fine.
Thank you very much. I'm back.
Okay.
Okay, now, plain and simple, when's the last time a U.S. congressman was murdered in a foreign land?
It's been a long time. Well, I think that Larry McDonald, when they killed him, of course, but that was quickly swept under the rug. That was back in the early 80s.
Why do you allow a congressman to die in Israel without an investigation? He did not die of a heart attack. He died because he was murdered by Shimon Peres.
All right, well, you're going to have to tell us because we don't know the answers. That's why we rely on you.
Okay, now that's the whole point. I investigated this in my book, Tide 3, Labor, Zionism, and the Holocaust. The sheer volume of coincidence, and here's the main coincidence. Every one of the members of this story are members of both Shimon Peres' Peace Center and Wayne Owens' Peace Center. Every one of them. Most are members, the Americans are all members of the Council on Foreign Relations. But since that time, the damage that has been done by the likes of Daniel Abraham and Shimon Peres and Daniel Kircher and the whole gang, the theft in the billions of dollars by these people, just continues and continues, and it never stops. And that's the reason Israel can be in war probably in the next few days to a year. We've been led astray by the mafia that runs us.
All right, well, Chris, we see the same thing over there in Iraq, where billions and billions and billions of dollars of money that we put in there have just disappeared, and, oh, shucks, nobody has any idea where it went, but after all, we're in a war over there, and so why should anybody be responsible for $8 billion disappearing? But go ahead.
Well,
we have the same problems. We just got a lot more money to waste than you do.
Again, I'm going to actually do, well, murdering a congressman has a little bit of a tinge to it. Okay? Now, I'm going to mention Martin Slapp and the connection to the murder of Ariel Sharon. One day before his cerebral hemorrhage, one day, the police released the results. You know, I'm going backwards even more. December 18th, it's supposed to be the end of Sharon. He's supposed to die of a stroke. I guess he doesn't drink enough tea in the Knesset, fed to him by Paris. He survives. The next day, I think it would be December 20th, Schlaf's son arrives in Israel with three computers. The police are ready for him. They arrest him and take the computers, and inside the computers is all the proof necessary to prove that Sharon had taken untold tens of millions of dollars for the casino and for his son. And one day before Sharon awaits his brain transplant from his cerebral hemorrhage, on the 3rd of January 2006, the police leak to Channel 10 TV channel the results of their investigation. And what do you know? Sharon is finished. He's finished in every way as a politician, and in my opinion, as a human being.
Now, basically, what you're suggesting is that Ariel Sharon was taking money and was stealing it, you know, there as supposedly as the prime minister representing the people, but he was really using his position to steal money from the casino and other funds?
Oh, without a doubt. But the question is, why would Schlaf send his son with three computers worth to get rid of Ariel Sharon? Now, the only answer is to get someone else ahead. And the only someone else ahead, there's only two people who would benefit by Ariel Sharon having to step down. And they were Ehud Olmert and Shimon Peres, the two leaders of the Kadima Party. Remember, there was no Kadima Party 2 months before. Sharon invented it. He was in the Likud. The number two and three positions were held, supposedly anyways, by Ehud Olmert and Shimon Peres. And when Sharon went, they took over the party. They took over the country. And they've got the country in hand. Israel is not being run by the people anyone has ever elected. No one ever elected these crooks. We're just stuck with them.
All right, fine. In other words, what you have is a ruling elite, and some of these are actually American-based.
American-based? Are you kidding? The whole CFR runs Israel. There is not an American diplomat, so-called diplomat, even the minor ones like Burns and Zinni, really minor people, they're all from the CFR. Every single one of them. Okay? Israel is not being run from Israel. This I've proven over and over again. The CFR has determined that Israel dies, and Israel will die because its leadership certainly the ones that aren't connected to the Vatican. That's the other alternative leadership are all tied up to the CFR.
All right, what you're saying then, essentially the American Council on Foreign Relations has people planted over there who have really taken over control of the government and doing everything wrong.
They're in America.
Okay.
They come as the ambassador to Tel Aviv, like Lewis or Kurtz, but they're in New York. Why should you plant them in Israel? What you do is you plant the Israeli politicians. You give them the money. You let them. You run their campaigns. You make sure that the only people who will run Israel were paid for by the CFR, and that's mostly true, except for people like Yossi Beilin and Shimon Peres, who are run by Europe. It's really a football game between Europe and the Bilderberg and Vatican versus the Anglo-Saxons, the Royal Institute and the CFR. Those are the players on the field.
All right. So basically, you think that they are there then to betray Israel, to get out of Gaza, to pull back from all the settlements, to create a totally indefensible border, to pull out of Samaria, and by so doing, there's just no way to defend Israel. Would that be your thesis?
Yeah, of course. But once again, if you go back to the 48 borders, no one is going to fight with. In 48, there were 6,000 dead, and the weapons weren't very good. This time around, you can have 6,000 in a day. It wouldn't be a problem. No one's going to fight Israel if we don't have the high ground. Why should anyone fight if we don't have the high ground? Now, what happened in Gaza today and the death of that soldier? Why did we pull out of Gush Katif? Who were we doing a favor for? And it continues, obviously continues. Pulling out of Gush Katif broke the hearts of 9,000 very, very ambitious Jewish farmers.
I think what you're speaking of pulling out of Gaza when you speak of Gush Katif.
Oh, of course.
Okay. Well, remember now, a lot of our listeners aren't as acquainted with the terms as you are, so you have to be a little.
I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. I know you're doing. I'm understanding you fine, but I want to be sure the audience does. So basically,
I'm
you're saying.
I'm comfortable talking to you. I don't really. I'm not a good patronizer, but you're right, of course. All right, invite me to speak. Here's my second plug. 918-482-2333. 918-482-2333. You gotta hear the facts. No one else can give them. Now, I wanna state something that's important. Part of the campaign against me in Israel is a vicious campaign on the internet claiming I'm a neo-Nazi, UFO freak, whatever you want. You don't believe it. That is part of the campaign against me. It is one of the most vicious campaigns around. What I'm saying has nothing to do with anything but the truth. They knocked off an American congressman. That is a fact. And your government is just letting Israel and Peres. It wasn't Israel. It was Peres and his gang. It was the gang surrounding Peres's Yossi Ginasar. It was... Oh, by the way, I'll tell you about Ginasar in 1 second. It wasn't Israel that killed him. It was a faction in Israel that's now running the country at this very moment. By the way, Yossi Ginasar didn't live very long after the scandal broke. He was dead and in the ground, age 54, of cancer. His cancer killed him in 5 months.
All right, so basically, of course, your contention that the Israeli intelligence was involved with the assassination of Isaac Rabin, that there was a murder, certainly of the American congressman, and then, of course, most recently, the murder of Ariel Sharon. And that's where we really got into trouble, wasn't it?
Because why not the U.S. aid worker? We're forgetting the assassination of William Foley. What we're talking about is stolen money. We're talking about a gang. We're talking about people taking well over $1 billion anyways and putting it in their pockets. And anyone who gets in their way will die.
And of course, really what you're suggesting is really not very safe to be over there and certainly not to be challenging the people who want to hold the reins of power.
I'm in America for one good reason. My family's in Israel and my friends are in Israel. I went through such a lousy, rotten few months. I just said I was lying in the hospital bed. I was there.
You have to explain to our listeners that you were involved in an automobile accident.
A stroke, an internet campaign, election, which is so dirty and lying. You've never seen anything like it. You've got the court. Can you imagine the person who hit me is suing me for deliberately running him over? I almost died in a hospital, but you know what? I'll bet that works too. I'll bet the courts are so rigged that'll work too.
And I think the other thing, of course, that you suspect that there's some malfeasance because the police won't even let you see your own car.
We haven't seen the car. My insurance agent, my lawyer, I wrote him today and I said, if you don't go see the car one way or another, you're a lawyer, there are ways to do it. I'll have to find another lawyer. Who knows what's going on with his lawyer? He's next to worthless. I broke. I was sitting in a hospital with tubes up everywhere, and I looked at that ugly hospital and these horrible nurses not answering my calls, and I said, when I get out of here, I'm never going to see the likes of this again. I took off for America. I went to Toronto where supposedly someone was going to look after me. He was crazy. So, and I mean nuts. So I took another trip. And I won't say to who and to where, but it was a homosexual trap. and that's all it was. I got out of it as fast as I could. Now I'm in a good situation.
All right,
I'm with real people. And
all right, well, Barry, certainly you've done a lot of great research work through the years and covered so many things. You're an investigative reporter, and we're really indebted to you for the work you did on the death of Rabin, because I don't think there's anybody could question, you know, your video that you have. So how could people get your video on the death of Isaac Rabin?
You know what? I'm going to give you my ex-wife. Believe it or not, she's handling my business affairs. I'm all the way in somewhere in the States, let's put it that way. Her address is Sasha L. S-A-S-H-L. Sash L. S-A-S-H-L at 012.012.net.il. Sash L at 012.net.il. She's taking care of things right now.
And of course, she has an excellent either DVD or certainly a video.
We have the Rabin video, but get the new book if you want to know what Wayne owns. I've got a long chapter, and by the way, I didn't do well. I still have not got a way to do this speech so average people can understand in Salt Lake City why he was knocked off. Wayne Owens was about to be exposed, that's for sure. But I have a funny feeling that Wayne Owens had a good side to him, that there was something good about this in some way. I just don't know what. But if they killed him, if Paris killed him, hello?
Yeah, go right ahead.
It's like Rabin. Rabin, it turns out, was a lot better guy than people understood. Somewhere deep in here is probably a good Wayne Owens, but he's doing some nasty, nasty things for 13 years with very nasty people. But when the Guinness Art scandal broke, you have two choices. Choice number one, he finally woke up and saw what the likes of Abraham and Cohen and Masri and Paris, all these people, had been doing to him for 13 years. That's choice number one. Choice number two, he was not going to the big house without a fight. You have two choices there. One, he woke up to all the horrors using that was employed against him. Or two, he was going to go down a decent guy. But I think there's decency in this story.
All right, fine. Well, I hope you can eventually get all of the information together and certainly bring it to
us. Why can't his family? This is something I don't understand, and I got to tell you. I have been interviewed on Utah Radio several times about my book. I've told them the basic issues that Owens was involved in some very underhanded dealings. It's unfortunate, but that's the fact. I told him who was stealing from who. I even gave him the U.S. Congress. I have a congressional report where they shut down the $60 million being given to Hani Masri and the Capital Venture Corporation. It's very complicated and boring. The point is, why doesn't someone in Utah, a decent journalist, take on this story already? He was the congressman from Utah.
Well, maybe they don't want to end up like Wayne, like Wayne did.
Does that happen in Utah?
I'm afraid that it happens all over the world today. I think that we live in a very, very violent world. I've talked to at least three assassins, government assassins, and certainly their stories are very, very valid. I believe they're quite true. And we live in a very, very unsafe world.
So you think a journalist from Salt Lake City would actually be up for assassination just by looking at Wayne Owens? Actually, who knows? You know what? I'm just a journalist. What the heck? You're right.
I think, Barry, you've been through an awful lot, certainly. Certainly you've been standing alone, and I think what's really so interesting is that Barry, through his efforts talking and lecturing in Israel, has convinced almost half of the people in Israel that Isaac Rabin was actually murdered. And, you know, the government did everything to cover it.
Not the guy sitting in jail. He was actually murdered in a conspiracy. That's
right.
The difference.
But anyway, not absolutely. It wasn't, in fact, this whole thing that you saw, where supposedly this right-winger shot him from behind, the bullet wounds came from the front, sort of like Bobby Kennedy. It's the same technique. You'd think they could do a better job.
Terrible. I mean,
the man who certainly who shot Bobby Kennedy was standing in front, whereas all the shots that killed Kennedy came from behind Bobby Kennedy.
The number of bullets, the direction, the same thing. It's very, very close to the Kennedy murders, as a matter of fact. But again, in the case of Wayne Owens, what do you do with a guy like that? You stick a needle full of air into a vein. It's going to get to the heart, and it's going to cause a heart attack. Then you throw the body on a beach, and you say he had a normal heart attack. It's the easiest murder in the book.
All right. Well, there are also ways to unfortunately, they have very refined, sophisticated ways of doing it. Barry, would you like to get your telephone number out one more time so people would know how to get in touch with you?
By the way, I won't charge. So long as you pay my transportation, I will come and depend on your generosity. If you phone 918-482-2333, 918-482-2333, I will come to your organization, church, club, I don't care what it is, free of charge, just get me there and put me up somewhere.
All right, fine. And our guest has been Barry Shamish. And of course, he's just come over from Israel after a terrible accident and really being under tremendous, tremendous pressure. Gives a fascinating discourse on all these things he's been investigating for so many years. Barry, God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you ever so much, Sam. See you later.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and hope you enjoyed our programs today. We, of course, our first program was with Victor Mordecai, and of course, coming over from Israel, giving us the insight into what's going on. And Victor is convinced there's going to be an attack on Iran. Now, I'm not so certain. I think that a lot of this is just hype. I think that the present time, there are actually uprisings in at least four of the districts over there. They're in the Baluchistan, in the Kurdish part of Iran, in the Iraqi part of Iran, and in the Kazakh part of Iran. And actually, American foreign special forces and even Israeli special forces are operating openly in these areas. Of course, they're operating with the resistance. We're financing the resistance in Iran. We're financing the opposition. We're beaming all sorts of information into Iran in an effort to overthrow the government that we installed in 1979. People do not understand what's going on in the Middle East. You go back to 1953. There was a democratically elected man. His name was Mossadegh. And, of course, the CIA went in and overthrew Mossadegh. They did away with the democratically elected government because we really don't believe in a democracy. It's all about power. It's all about, well, there's a timetable. Certainly we could talk about oil, and certainly we wanted a government that we could depend upon, so they brought the Shah of Iran to power, and he was there from 1953 until 1979. And he was America's, well, best ally in the Middle East. Yes, he was autocratic. Yes, there were excesses of his government. Yes, probably people were tortured and killed by his police, and police do that sort of thing, and that's no excuse. But, of course, instead of trying to replace him with somebody who would be more moderate and fair and democratic, the CIA undermined the Shah of Iran and brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power. And we have the books that were written at that time, and I'm old enough to remember 1979 when Zbigniew Brzezinski was the advisor to President Jimmy Carter, who really wasn't very smart. And we replaced a man who was the ally of the United States with the sixth largest army in the world, and certainly a good anti-communist. We replaced him with the Ayatollah Khomeini, who was our enemy, who stood against everything that we believe in. And in 1979, this did not make any sense. Why would we replace a friend with an enemy? Unless you wanted an enemy, you have to have enemies. You always have to have enemies, whether it's Fidel Castro or whether it's the Ayatollah Khomeini or the people over there or Saddam Hussein, who incidentally we kept in power. Repeatedly when the military tried to overthrow him, we kept Saddam Hussein in power. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were simply pointing out that it doesn't really make sense that we would have overthrown Mossadegh in 1953, who was democratically elected, and we did, and anybody who doubts that, we can give you the documentation. And then we installed the Shah, who we overthrew in 1979, and we installed the Ayatollah Khomeini. And why would we install somebody who hated America and stood for everything we stood for, unless, of course, we were creating the best enemy money could buy? And this is a recurrent pattern. And of course, one of the things I would suggest is Fidel Castro. Fidel Castro is the one country today we just have a total embargo on. We won't have anything to do with him. We won't trade with him. We restrict travel to Cuba. and yet we put him in power. And David Rockefeller's daughter is very, very close friend Fidel Castro, and Fidel Castro has come to the United States to have private meetings with David Rockefeller, who headed the Council on Foreign Relations for many years and formed the Council, the Trilateral Commission. And if you doubt what I'm saying, first of all, you need to get David Rockefeller's memoirs. We do carry the book in paperback now. We hope you'll get David Rockefeller's book and read it, especially the part where he says, you know, some people think that I and my family are part of a cabal that's conspiring with others throughout the world to create a new international order. And if that's the charge, I stand guilty. I confess, I am a proud internationalist. So he is, in fact, admitting he's part of a cabal that, of course, is conspiring with other people to create a new international order. And, of course, what he's really saying is, my loyalty is not to the United States, and that's true. There are people who have no loyalty to the United States who are in positions of leadership, and, of course, they work very closely with communists throughout the world. You need to see my video, The World Revolution, where you'll see my interview with Ambassador Earl T. Smith, American ambassador to Cuba, who was ordered by the United States State Department to force Batista, the democratically elected president of Cuba, to leave the country in 1958, at the end of 1958, and so that Fidel Castro could take over, and we knew he was a communist. And we have supported Fidel Castro ever since then, but we can't let the American people know that. And I would simply like to ask, if you think, oh, we don't support Fidel Castro, why it was that Bill Clinton and Janet Reno sent 125-man, SWAT team down to Miami to kidnap Elian Gonzalez and send him back to Cuba to build up Fidel Castro's prestige, not only in Cuba but throughout the world. Why would they have done that if he's really the wicked enemy of the United States? And I would like to suggest nothing as it appears to be. You'd need to see by video The World Revolution, and really and it's only available in VHS, but give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope many of you want to get my talk on Iraq, the Untold Story. And it comes with a syllabus that has so many documents you need to have, pointing out that all of the wars of the last century were totally contrived. And everything you've learned in school just isn't so. And we'll give you all the sources of reference. And remember, I've traveled throughout the world. I've interviewed presidential candidates, and yes, and presidents and ambassadors and generals. And of course, what they tell you is entirely different than you'll ever learn in college. Our high schools, our universities are not there to educate our people. They're to indoctrinate them in lies. Because behind everything that is going on are people who want a one-world government. And a new world religion, and there is a conspiracy against Christianity today, and you see it manifested every day, and most people don't even know there's a problem. Well, we're really involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of a Christian civilization. We hope many of you, of course, decide to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and quite frankly, we do need your help to keep doing what we're doing 5 hours a day. We do carry the Berkey products, and we do carry, of course, Miracle 2 soap and a couple of other things that help us to be on the air, but we're primarily dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs and believe in what we're trying to do. So remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.